You're listening to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra, Hudson, Catskill. This program is Bequency, and my name is Mayuko. Bequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people, plus a freeform mix of sounds made by birds and humans inspired by birds. We started today's show with the song titled Bird Nest Bound by Charlie Patton. And today's guest is Julie Hart, the project coordinator for the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. It's a citizen science project that aims to build an inventory of all the birds breeding in New York State. This project started in 1980, and it takes place every 20 years, and it runs for 5 years each time. And we are in the final year of the third New York Breeding Bird Atlas. So now is your last chance for I guess, the next 20 years. Not going to happen the next 20 years. So your last chance for a while to join. And New York Breeding Bird Atlas is open and accessible to anyone interested in birds. So Julie's going to tell us about the apps that you can download on your phone and some other tips that help beginners to enjoy birding and how such technology has changed the way we survey from the previous times. We'll also hear how much progress we're making here in the Hudson Valley and immediate actions that we can take. You know, Julie's also known for her quite popular appearance along with another Hudson Valley birder, Rich Guthrie, on WAMC Vox Pop Show. They have like a monthly birding theme episodes, and it's hosted by Ray Graff. And was kind of thinking how lucky I am to have my own radio show so I can ask a bunch of questions with Julie. And, you know, it's kind of like Vox Pop callers. Dreams come true moments. So let's listen to my conversation with, again, Julie Hart. Thank you for tuning in. This is Frequency on WGXC.
My name is Julie Hart. I work for the New York Natural Heritage Program, which is part of SUNY ESF, the Environmental Science and Forestry School. And I'm based at the DC Central Office here in Albany. And I'm the coordinator for the third New York Breeding Bird Atlas. I think one of the things to realize about this project is that it's a massive project, right? So we have 4,000 volunteers, roughly, just under 4,000 volunteers. We have 12 regional coordinators. There's an assistant coordinator, we have a steering committee, we have subcommittees. I am involved in coordinating all those different efforts. I'll be involved in data analysis, data management, writing grants and getting money, fundraising, working with the public, supervising technicians in the summer, all these different things, right? And so it's really a multifaceted job, and I feel like I've been fortunate in my career so far that I've had a pretty wide array of positions. So I've worked with big data. I have worked on several Atlas projects. I coordinated another community science project called Mountain Birdwatch for several years. That focuses on Becknell's thrush, but other high elevation species across the Northeast as well. So I think I've had a really wide array of experiences that have really helped me prepare for this job, which is really this huge effort that there's so many moving parts and it's just a really large coordination challenge. Mm-hmm. So
how are we doing in the Hudson Valley?
Yeah, so the Hudson Valley actually is doing pretty well compared to other parts of the state. I think there's a really large bird watching community. There's a lot of really active bird clubs in the area. But there is still, you know, places for people to participate. There's a lot of opportunities in Columbia County, particularly.
Oh.
There's a few in Ulster. And then if you wanted to go a little further afield, that there's still a number of areas in the Catskills and then down into Sullivan and Orange County also need quite a bit of work.
Mm-hmm. But this is the last season of this whole Breeding Bird Atlas. So in addition to, I guess, covering those priority blocks, what's the most pressing issue as we enter spring?
Yes, so as we can hear around us in the background, birds have started to arrive. They've started to sing. Some birds have already started nesting. So we are really looking for people as they're out right now in the spring to document these, what we call the early breeding species. And there's a number of birds that are breeding right now. So that would include the owls, also eagles. Those are probably the most well-known ones, but also things like ravens, crows, woodpeckers, some of our cavity nesters that are here year-round. They can start early because they have those cavities to keep them, you know, keep their eggs and young safe, even if we get some late winter storms. Really fun, actually, are the woodcocks and the snipe, which have just amazing sounds and courtship displays and are just really, really fun to watch. And the woodcock have arrived already, and they're already doing their courtship flights. So anywhere you notice any of these breeding behaviors for species like that, we would love for you to report them to the Atlas.
Mm-hmm. The biggest challenge for me as only a second year Atlaser is I don't necessarily know all the breeding behavior of birds. So when I see some birds, you can't even tell like if it's a couple or if it's just two individuals, like two males or two females hanging out together. Not super easy to tell if this is truly the breeding behavior or not. You have to be somewhat familiar with the species, but woodcock is pretty easy to tell because what they do is showy and funny, very entertaining.
Yeah, I do think that one of the great joys of atlasing is how much you learn. Mm-hmm. Because if you come at it with a little bit of curiosity, it will really expand your birding knowledge. So it's not just focused on identification skills, but really understanding when they're around, why they're in this habitat over another, and like you said, getting to know those behaviors. There are a lot of resources out there that can help, and just, yeah, being curious and trying to look it up and figure out what is it that I'm seeing? I'm not sure. And then going and finding out. I find that to be a really rewarding part of atlasing, and I still learn things all the time.
Mm. If anybody wants to join now, and particularly if they're beginner birders, what's the best way for them to start?
Yeah, so I do think that atlasing is one of those projects where people from any background and skill level can participate. So even if you just have some birdhouses in your backyard, maybe you have some bluebird boxes, then that's something that you can report. And then you can just build from there, like you said. So in order to participate, we do use eBird for data entry, and that's free for anyone to get an account at eBird. And then we do have a special, eBird calls it a portal, but it really just is an Atlas project. So there's a project just for the Atlas. So if you're submitting observations using the mobile app, then you just need to go into your settings and change it to the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. And then all of your observations will be automatically submitted to the Atlas that way.
So first install the app.
Yes.
And like you said, the backyard could be a great place to start already. But if you want to,
do more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I would say, so there's a couple of options. We do have a Facebook discussion group. So you can find us on Facebook and join that and ask questions or share stories there. And then I think I mentioned before that I work with a whole team of regional coordinators. And so the regional coordinators are the ones who have a really good handle of what's needed in the specific regions throughout the state. So if that's more what you're after, like, okay, where are the biggest needs in my area, then I would say contact us. Mm-hmm. And if you email to our general email, which is nybba3@gmail.com, then I get those emails and I will forward your email to the respective regional coordinator who can help you give you personalized recommendations of where to go near where you live or where you're vacationing or where you have a cabin, you know, depending on how you want to how you want to atlas and where you want to atlas, they can give you that personal advice.
Oh, that would be great, because people must be taking a lot of, like, for example, Catskill, mm-hmm. I've heard not being covered too much.
Yeah.
And Adirondacks. Catskill too, both. But a lot of people are going there for camping.
Exactly.
And it's easy when you're given, like, this is our quest of this month or this week even. You go there, you go these places, and you find this bird. It looks like this, it sounds like this, it acts like this. And that's one thing you're going after, because that's the quest of the week.
Yes,
it makes it very easy.
Yeah.
To...
We'll be doing more of that this year. And in fact, our latest newsletter, and if you were to go on our website and look at the latest news post, it's about bald eagles. And what we did was we looked at all the historical locations for bald eagles and compared that to the data that we have in the atlas so far. And then we identified blocks where they've been documented in the past but haven't been documented yet in the atlas. So those are great target blocks to go out right now and try to find eagle nests. And then we'll be doing that for a couple other species as well throughout the season.
Very cool.
Yeah, so that'll be a fun way too, to help us fill in some gaps.
Mm-hmm. Eagle is not super hard to find.
It's not, but it's amazing. Yeah, they have the biggest nest around. They're usually in this huge white pine near the top. It's usually, you can see them from really far away. When they're going out and collecting sticks, and they're working on their nest, mm-hmm. so they're more out in the open. But then once they're sitting on the egg, they'll sit down so low that you might not see any of their white heads sticking up over the rim of the nest, and so you don't even realize they're there. Mm. So now is really the time to go out and look for them when they're still building and repairing their nests.
I see. So that's why that's the current quest.
You're listening to Be Quency on WGXC. Today's guest is Julie Hart, the project coordinator for the New York Breeding Bird Atlas, a citizen science project that aims to build an inventory of all the birds breeding in New York State. Thanks for listening.
So you mentioned the eBird app, and in addition to eBird app that you can download on your phone for free, we have the Merlin app, which helps you identify what bird you're seeing or what bird you're hearing. Like, it's got recording settings and it will tell you right away, like, what sound you're listening to right now. And so that's a tremendous improvement, I'm imagining, from the last time people had the Breeding Bird Atlas 20 years ago.
Yes.
So the question is, besides making it easier to capture the data more efficiently, are there any other advantages? Is the data better or quicker to do analysis?
Yeah, so I think it's a little complicated, the answer to that, because of course there's pros and cons to everything, right? And I would say Merlin is a great resource. It is really good. It's pretty accurate. It's not 100% accurate though, right? So, you know, some things that we struggle with, like a pine warbler versus a dark-eyed junco, for example, they have very similar songs. Merlin can screw those up as well. So it is really important to take whatever Merlin says with a little bit of caution and try to verify it yourself. But having said that, I think that it's also a really great resource because it opens up birding to so many more people. And it's, I think, you know, allows people to learn and recognize bird songs much quicker. Like, that learning curve is shorter now than it used to be back when we were listening to CDs and or going out and having to learn from somebody else, right? Now you have that power right in your hands, and you can just go out and identify and verify it yourself, and you can just really quickly get more observations in the atlas. And for your life list as well, I think that's a great thing. But I think, you know, it does bring in a few more errors into the data. It does mean that we have to vet the data a little bit more carefully. So there's pros and cons. But I think overall, it's a huge asset to the project to have eBird and Merlin and some of the other apps that are out there, I think are really, really, really helpful.
People often are very excited about Merlin app whenever they discover it. Mm-hmm. And they really want to talk to you about it. It's like, yes. Do you know this app?
Yes.
But there was a time, maybe the last update or something has to do with it. But recently I was feeding my photos of purple finch. Just wanted to make sure that it's not house finch.
Right.
And Merlin said it's a black vulture. Like,
what? You're like, I don't know.
I don't think so. So yeah, sometimes so it's outrageous.
Sometimes it can it be says. Way off. Yes. And so you really need to be careful and verify yourself.
Right. But that's a good one. People may just submit it as a black vulture.
Exactly. Merlin told me that's what it was. It must be that. No, not necessarily.
So that's interesting. So as a receiving end of the data, there's still human effort. A lot of them has to involve in order to make it accurate.
Yes. Yeah, we have a very complicated set of filters that we have that look at, you know, where we expect each species to be, when we expect them to be there, behaviors that we know that they actually exhibit versus ones like a black vulture is not going to be singing, but people report it as singing, and it's like, well, then something's wrong here. Either you didn't have a black vulture or you heard something else. It's a very complicated matrix of decisions that we have to make to review all of those data. So that's what we'll be doing after this field season. We'll be switching into that mode of looking at the data.
I see. So in terms of quality of the data, you think 20 years ago, maybe more experts or more experienced birders would be the only one participating in the project.
So yeah.
The quality might have been actually higher, you think?
It might have been higher. I mean, there were still, you know, issues with the data that still took them a long time to vet the data even back then. Mm-hmm. But one of the goals of this, the third Atlas project, that one of the goals that the steering committee set out was to engage the birding community. And we have tried throughout this project to make it as open and accessible to anyone who wants to participate. And so to give you some idea, the last Atlas, there were about 1,200 participants. And now we have over 3,800 this time around. So I think we are doing a good job of making it more accessible to more people. But it comes with some challenges.
That's a very interesting story. I think it would be best maybe if you can, and if you're a beginner, it's always good to go out with experienced people.
Yes.
And so you can have them confirm in addition to maybe Merlin. I found it very helpful that way. And I still do that even if I go on my own and confirm with Merlin, but also send like photos to some other people and be like, Merlin says this and I think this, like, what do you think?
Yes,
before sending it to eBird.
That's a great way to go about doing it, for sure. And I think, going out with experts, if you can, that is also a great, great thing to do. And that is something, too, if you were to email us at that nybba3@gmail.com, we can hook you up, depending on where you live. We could potentially hook people up with experienced atlasers. Because, like you mentioned before, sometimes there's these courtship behaviors that you're not sure, is that courtship or is that like territorial behavior? Like, is that aggressive or is that like they're getting ready to mate? Like, sometimes it can be really hard to tell because they're not doing it very often. We're not often paying attention. Right. And sometimes it is pretty aggressive, their courtship. So sometimes it can be really hard to tell. But those experienced atlasers, you know, we have people in New York who participated in the first Atlas in 1980 and the last one and the current one. And so they are like, you know, they know so much, way more than I know. So they're really great people to, if you can find them, to go out with those people.
Yeah, those people are great assets.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell. I just saw yesterday red-shouldered hawk pair. First saw them, I heard screams.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, birds looking, like, chasing each other. And I also heard some American crows elsewhere. So I thought maybe the crows were mobbing a hawk. But then when I approached, there were two of them. So I thought it looked aggressive. I just couldn't tell what was going on right there.
Yeah, I think I would have the same problem because sometimes they'll be fighting for a territory, and so they could actually be like fighting and clawing in midair. But if they were courting, the less aggressive version of courting for them would just be flying very close together, kind of paralleling each other in flight, right? So it's this very synchronous flight, very close together. Mm. But a lot of the raptors will also see, you know, they'll fly together and they'll share food from one to the other in mid-flight. And so they're like, you know, they're dropping food and catching it. And so it could look like either play or fighting, mm-hmm. but they're actually testing how well they get along together. That's part of their pair bonding and testing each other's fitness and uh-huh. and whatnot. So it's, sometimes it can be really hard. And then what I recommend in that case is to watch for quite a while, you know, spend 5, maybe even 20 minutes watching and just seeing how it plays out. Mm-hmm. And usually by the end, you have some idea of whether it's been an aggressive or a friendly interaction. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you still can't tell. And then that's when you have to describe it and, you know, like post it on the Facebook page and say, hey, this is what I saw. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know what's happening. And there'll be some other experts on there that can help.
This is Frequency on WGXC. If you're just joining us, my today's guest is Julie Hart, the project coordinator for the New York Breeding Bird Atlas, a citizen science project that aims to build an inventory of all the birds breeding in New York State. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I find it interesting about the quality of the data because that's not something when we're collecting it, we don't think about the later consequence of people having to go through your checklist and find a thing. But there was one thing I found really funny about when you were on the WAMC Vox Pop Birding Show, and you were, I think, talking about Project Feeder Watch,
mm-hmm.
and Ray Graff said, like, he said, I know that these people participating are all volunteers, but like, can you fire them when they're so incompetent, like sending like too much, like so out of touch of data? And I'm like, oh my God, I could get fired for reporting some ridiculous
it
thing.
It happens.
Not knowing.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely certain people that we've flagged and we know we can't rely on their data. So mm-hmm. we'll have to remove their data at the end.
Mm-hmm. We deserve it.
It happens.
When we don't know what the heck we're doing, we deserve it.
I think it's okay if you don't know when you're starting, but if we reach out to you and try to explain and educate a little bit,
well,
and then you
questioned.
Still don't change mm-hmm. or modify, then that's when it becomes a problem and we're like, okay, well, We can't trust your observations now.
Right. It's not your self-expression. It's a science.
It's a science, exactly. Yes, we need it to be very factual based on actual observations. I mean, that's something that's happened in like every Atlas project. There will be people that do fabricate data because they want to come across as like a expert atlaser, or they know that the bird is there, but they can't actually observe it somehow. It just keeps, you know, escaping them. So they just fabricate it. And I mean, that happens in every Atlas project, unfortunately. Yeah.
And you can catch it. When it's so outrageous.
If it's outrageous, yes. But if it's like, oh yeah, I saw a white-breasted nuthatch right here. And it's like, well, yeah, I would never know because, yeah, white-breasted nuthatches are everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you can't catch it, but the outliers we definitely catch for mm-hmm. sure.
But yeah. If it's something like it's supposed to be, the reality is it's 15 American robins versus you counted 20, that kind of thing is not a big deal.
That's not a big deal, no.
No. 1,000 Canada geese versus 800
yes.
Canada geese. That's not
no. That's
really,
not a big
matter.
Deal. No, no. Yeah. I mean, if there's 1,000 Canada geese and you put one,
right,
that can be a problem.
Then you should be fired.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Technically not, because we don't have a contract with you and we're not paying you or anything. But we can choose whether to use your data or not. So mm-hmm. we do have the ultimate say there.
Yeah, I think I have an opposite problem that I'm always worried about if my report is accurate or if I'm mm-hmm. making mistakes about the breeding behavior too. But even the identification of the bird. And that's why I'm trying to take photos as much as possible and always have other people confirm, because I just cannot be yeah. sure. And that makes me nervous, rather.
Yeah,
going
that's
on
great.
Atlasing on my own.
I think it's great that you try to document as much as you can and that you are cautious. I think that is, I would much rather hear people being cautious or conservative mm-hmm. than the opposite. And I think, yeah. Anytime you can get a sound recording or a photo or even a little video, anything, anytime you have a question, then that really helps us answer and it helps you learn as well, right? Like
yeah.
once you've reached out to someone and they've told you, yeah, of course, that's definitely a purple finch, mm-hmm. then yeah.
Yeah, it's actually helpful. So what do you think we'll learn from the atlasing? Any surprises so far?
Yeah, I'm really excited to see the changes in distribution and maybe some range shifts because of climate change. Also looking forward to see some information about phenology. So every time everyone enters an observation, we have a date and a behavior for that species, and that gives us a really refined look at what's going on when, like what behaviors, what stage of breeding each species is at what particular time. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing some more phenology information out of this atlas. In terms of surprises, I haven't seen too many surprises yet, other than like the extent of some of the range shifts. So for example, Black Vulture, they have moved quite a bit further north. So they're year-round in Albany, and then they'll be even further north of us. Merlin is a species that actually has moved south from Canada into New York, and they were not here at all in the first atlas in the 1980s. And now they breed across the entire state. They breed even into Pennsylvania. So that's one that has just dramatically expanded its range, which is really great to see. You know, I think we're starting to see, you know, we don't have all of the data in yet, but it does look like we are seeing some declines as well in things like grassland birds and the aerial insectivores, so things like swallows and swifts and things like that. But I hope there are some more surprises. We did have the Mississippi kite that showed up a couple years ago. I don't know if you saw that or heard that. That was about half an hour north of Albany in a super residential neighborhood. They just picked some random tree in the back of like suburbia and tried to breed there, and that's pretty far north, pretty far out of their range, so that was a nice treat, nice surprise. But yeah, we'll We'll see.
And that was not an outrageous fabricated
observation. No, I went and saw it. You went. Yes, I went and saw it, and I was the first one to get breeding evidence for it, to confirm nesting for it.
Okay.
Yes, most people were there documenting it because they wanted to see a Mississippi kite because they're not very common in New York. Mm-hmm. And I got there, and I was like, this is a pair. They're acting like a pair. And they keep flying off in that direction over there. And so I walked around the neighborhood, and sure enough, I watched them fly up to a tree that had some dead branches, and they would break off the branches and fly over to another tree, and they were building their nest. And then subsequent to that, people were able to see them keep on building their nest and sitting on their nest and whatnot. So, so we were able to, they tried to breed. They didn't raise successfully any young, but they tried. So it's pretty far north for them. It's pretty out of their range, so it was a nice treat for that year.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
You sounds very observing, I guess, part of your job, too. But maybe you've always been a person who observes things, the birds' behavior and all that.
Yeah, I think I've always been a person who asks why rather than what. I think a lot of birders who are listers are like, what is it, right? And I always want, why? Okay, yeah, what is it? Okay, that's the first question. But then why? Why is it here? What is it doing? Why is it choosing to be here and not over there? And what does that behavior mean? And that kind of thing. That's more what drives me as a scientist.
So that's more like the way you bird.
Yeah.
What's your favorite way to do those bird? You like to go on your own, or you like to go with other people? Or?
I think I'm pretty flexible. I would say my top most preferred way of birding is alone and going slowly, because it gives me more time to slow down and really observe and absorb what I'm seeing. But I also love exploring new places with my husband, or leading field trips with groups, because then, you know, there's always amazing people that you meet when you lead bird walks, and they have so much enthusiasm and interest, and that really inspires me as well. So that's also very rewarding. So I kind of do a little bit of everything, but I do love the slowness of atlasing and the observation part of atlasing.
You don't get sick of going birding when something becomes your job. Sometimes you don't want to do it at your free time anymore. That's
right.
Never the case.
Yeah.
You always enjoy it.
I do always enjoy birding. I think sometimes I prefer to go alone or like away from people, just because I want to experience it myself rather than run into someone who recognizes me and then starts asking me lots of questions, and then it turns into work on my day off, right? So there are times where I do try to separate it as like, I'm going birding for me versus I'm going birding for work. And then that way in my mind, they're kind of two different things, a little separation there.
That's a unique challenge.
It is. Yes. But I never get tired of watching, you know, like I was showing you the house sparrows that were breeding and building their nest right here. You know, not a very special bird. Most people overlook house sparrows, but it's still fun to watch them and see where they choose to nest and what materials they're using. And, you know, house sparrows breed almost year round. So it's amazing how such a tiny little bird can successfully raise young this early in the year.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's always something interesting for
me. Yeah, I think that is the beauty of this whole project too, that something, even something you take for granted, if you pay more attention to it, you learn something that you didn't know about it and sort of amazes you. So yeah, that's really wonderful. And thank you for all the effort of helping us out.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you to all the atlasers who are helping out. This is a monumental project, and we could not do it without the thousands of people from all across the state and even further afield that are participating. So thank you.
American woodcock.
We listened to a field recording of American woodcock. That was one of the birds that was mentioned in the interview. And the recording was from Stokes Field Guide to Bird Songs. Thanks to Julie for taking the time for this interview. And also thanks to my de facto producer of today's episode, Chris Franks, who is my birding buddy. And Chris suggested like 90% of the questions I asked in the interview today. And that's why I sound like I'm an informed person, despite being an only second year Atlaser. So thanks for the help. And you can find more details of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas to find their event calendar and to join their newsletter, or contact your regional coordinator and all that kind of stuff. It's available at their website, which is at ebird.org/AtlasNewYork. Sorry, I should have said Atlas New York is Atlas NY. So again, it's ebird.org/AtlasNY. And here's a great opportunity to find experienced birders to go birding with. If you live near Catskill, Larry Fetterman, the president of Northern Catskill Audubon, who I actually interviewed him last year on this show, Bequency, Larry is starting his spring birding series at the Ramshorn Livingston Sanctuary, which is near the Catskill. Walks begin on Friday, April 19th, and the series will run each Friday through May 31st. You can email Larry at birderlarry@verizon.net, birderlarry, L-A-R-R-Y, @verizon.net for more information and to join. And also in Greene County, tomorrow, a bird walk coordinated by Hudson Mohawk Bird Club and Alan DeVoe Bird Club. It's happening at Vosper Swamp. Hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Vosper Swamp. More information is available at www.alandevoebirdclub.org. You can search also for Alan DeVoe Bird Club and you'll find an information of this event. And if you're in Ulster County, there are also spring birding walks happening organized by John Burroughs Natural History Society. And there's one walk that's happening on April 20th. It's led by Peter Schomburger, who I also interviewed last year on this show. And you can find out more about their walks at their website, jbnhs.org. Again, the website is jbnhs.org. All those past interviews I mentioned that happened on this show, Bequency, are available for listening at bequency.tumblr.com. And now it's time for bird-inspired music. We're going to listen to some traditional folk songs from Okinawa, which is the southern tip of Japan. And we're going to hear a song titled Basui no Turibushi. Even though I'm from Japan, I'm kind of awkwardly pronouncing it. But because Okinawan people have their own dialects and like vocabularies and such, which I'm not familiar with, I'm not from there, that part. So, but Basu Inuturi Busi, it's about a song about the crested serpent eagles. And the story, it's kind of a little story about the eagles who built their nests on a sea fig tree, and they successfully raise their chick, and then they go on flying in the morning sky with their juvenile eagle eventually. And this is a song from Yaejima Island, which is one of those Okinawa islands, and usually sung for their New Year celebration, because I guess it's kind of a celebratory image to it. But I thought this is a perfect song for today's show, which has been about the breeding bird, Atlas. So, the recording we're going to hear is performed by Ohama Anpan, Koshima Yoshio, and Miyara Kosei. So, let's listen to this song about the crescent serpent eagles. Thank you for listening. This is Frequency on WGXC.
Oh.
That last song was titled Chigi Chijuya, another traditional folk song from Okinawa, Japan, and it was performed by Kadekaru Rinsho, the artist I absolutely love. And Chijuya in the title means plovers, and Chigi Chijuya, this song is often a farewell song. Depends on performers, they sometimes change the lyrics, but it's usually a theme of, like, you know, farewell or loneliness, which I was wondering why. And apparently in Japan, which is my homeland, there's a long tradition of associating plover calls with loneliness, probably inspired by a song in Manyoshu, which is the oldest collection of Japanese poems compiled in mid-AD 700s. And people observed plovers often hang in a flock, so when there's only one calling, people thought it might have been like it might have strayed from its friends and family, and that's lonely. And so that seems to be the idea. And ahead of that was the song of crested serpent eagles nesting and raising chicks and stuff. also from Okinawa, Japan, and it was titled Basinu Turibusi. When I was speaking with Julie, we heard killdeer calling, so I thought it would be nice to play the song of, you know, the plovers also. And that's it for my show today. You're listening to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM. This program has been Frequency, and I have been Mayuko. Coming up next is The Countdown, produced by Tom Rowe, counting down 10 new sound stories or songs, American Top 40 style, so don't go anywhere. I will be back on April 27th. I'm here every fourth Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. I hope you will join me again. Thank you for listening. See you next time, and have a wonderful rest of the weekend.